You're listening to the daily radio ministry of Pastor Sandy Adams of Calvary Chapel Stone Mountain in Atlanta, Georgia. Pastor Sandy is currently teaching through the book of Job. Chapters 11 through 17 of the book of Job is where Pastor Sandy will be teaching today.
With God, our wisdom and strength. He has counsel and understanding. If he breaks a thing down, it cannot be rebuilt. If he imprisons a man, there can be no release. In other words, God has ultimate say in his creation and in the affairs of men. If he withholds the waters, they dry up. If he sends them out, they overwhelm the earth. With him are strength and prudence. Notice, the deceived and the deceiver are his. You know, God is ultimately responsible for both. The deceived and the deceiver. You know, he's sovereign over all of life, the good and the bad. He allows deception to exist for his purposes. He leads counselors away plundered and makes fools of the judges. He loosens the bonds of kings and binds their waist with a belt. Notice he loosens them, but he also binds them. You know, he's in charge of both. He leads princes away plundered and overthrows the mighty. He deprives the trusted ones of speech and takes away the discernment of the elders. He pours contempt on princes and disarms the mighty. In other words, it doesn't matter what happens in life, you can't interpret it as if God has lost control. He's still in control. He's still God. God is good. God is right. God is just. Life is unjust. Live with it. He uncovers deep things out of darkness and brings the shadow of death to light. He makes nations great, but he also destroys them. He enlarges nations and guides them. He takes away the understanding of the chiefs of the people of the earth and makes them wander in pathless wilderness. They grope in the dark without light, and he makes them stagger like a drunken man. Job is affirming God's sovereignty. Now, we don't always see his purposes, but we know that all that happens in the universe is at the very least allowed by a sovereign God. There's a passage in Deuteronomy chapter 29, verse 29, that says, "The secret things belong unto the Lord." There are some things that only make sense from the perspective of heaven, that we'll only understand when we get to eternity. Notice here, he makes nations great and he destroys them. Again, God does both. No matter how dark and how unfair your life may seem, rest assured that God has not lost control of the situation. He is still in charge. You know, to lighten the ship of suffering, don't throw God's governance overboard. Sometimes we're tempted to do that. When we're suffering, we want to somehow believe that God has gone to sleep. You know, or God has forgotten about us. Not so. There might be a reason going on in heaven, like with Job, that we don't understand, that we don't ever see. And yet God is working out his purposes, and he's expecting us to trust him. In other words, God is still captain in the storm or in the gentle breeze. Chapter 13, "Behold, my eye has seen all this. My ear has heard and understood it. What you know, I also know. I am not inferior to you. But I would speak to the Almighty, and I desire to reason with God." Job isn't inferior to these three friends. He's familiar with their shallow arguments and with their insufficient theology. They're telling him nothing new. Job just wants to go over their heads and take his questions to the boss. He just wants to talk this out with God. That's what he wants. He says, "But you forgers of lies, you are all worthless physicians." That's not a good thing when you go to comfort your friend and he calls you a worthless physician. "Oh, that you would be silent and it would be your wisdom. You would prove wiser if you just shut up." Sounds like something your wife would say to you, doesn't it? "Now hear my reasoning and heed the pleadings of my lips. Will you speak wickedly for God and talk deceitfully for him?" This is interesting. Job says, you have spoken wickedly for God. You have put words in God's mouth that are not true. Be careful you never make that same mistake. Zophar had put words in God's mouth that were wicked and false. Who is he to suggest that Job had received less than he deserved? I mean, Job got angry when he said that. He was angry. Zophar was so arrogant. This is why, guys, it's always dangerous to speak for God. Has anyone ever said to you, I know why God allowed that to happen in your life? Anyone ever said that to you? Well, understand this. They don't know why God allowed that to happen. They might think they do, but they're just guessing. Never forget that. Don Baker writes, no one knows the mind of God but God. No one can fully explain God's actions but God. This is why I'm very careful about telling anyone God's will for their life. You know, you come to me, you ask for advice, and I kind of shrug my shoulders and say, I'll pray for you. You know, if I can point to chapter and verse, thus saith the Bible, I'm on good, solid ground. I can make comments. But when it comes to who you marry, or the job you choose, or the college you attend, or even the movies that you watch, or the team that you cheer for, or the candidate that you vote for, man, that's between you and God. You need to hear from God on those issues. You need to work it out with God. And likewise, Job wants to work out his suffering, his questions with God. He won't be satisfied until he hears from God. You know, here's good advice whenever you counsel a suffering person. Don't be a know-it-all like Zophar. Don't go busting into their lives with all these definitive answers about this and that. Oh, I can tell you why this happened. Zophar would have been wiser if he had just looked at Job and said, you know, Job, I don't know why any of this has happened. You know, sometimes the most God-honoring counsel we can give a friend is, I don't know. He says, will you show partiality for him? Will you contend for God? Will it be well when he searches you out? Or can you mock him as one mocks a man? He will surely reprove you if you secretly show partiality. Will not his excellence make you afraid and the dread of him fall upon you? Your platitudes are proverbs of ashes. Your defenses are defenses of clay. Hold your peace with me and let me speak. Then let come on me what may. Job wants Zophar to nip it. He wants God to speak, and then he'll accept whatever comes from the hand of God. Notice he says, if God came here, you wouldn't be speaking so glibly. If God were in the room with us, you wouldn't be speaking so glibly. Your platitudes, your proverbs of ashes, your defenses of clay. You wouldn't be so bold, Zophar, if God were here. He will surely reprove you. And isn't it interesting, at the end of the book, God does rebuke Job's three friends for the things they put Job through. Well, verse 14, why do I take my flesh in my teeth and put my life in my hands? Job bristles up at Zophar's criticism, but he's willing to accept God's rebuke if it comes. He even says, though he slay me, yet I will trust him. Wow. Can you say that tonight? Though God slay me, I will still trust him. That's not kindergarten theology, by the way. That's real faith. What a powerful affirmation of confidence in God. Though he slay me, I will trust him. You see, Job has no problem with God's discipline. It's right. It's just. It's merciful. Job trusts in God. Whatever God chooses for Job, negative circumstances, painful, unexpected twists of providence, suffering, even death, Job will gladly accept. Job trusts God with his life, come what may. Do you have that kind of faith? Or do you worship God only for the blessings you receive? Only for the good that can come from it? Or do you worship God because he's worthy to be worshiped. Job worships God, not because God promises him a good outcome to his life or a life full of blessing. Job worships God because he's worthy to be worshiped. You know, even though Job was unable to reconcile what had happened to him with what he knew of God, even though there was so much that was a mystery, even though he felt betrayed by God, nevertheless, he knows that God is great. And he is determined to trust God come what may, for he knows that God is trustworthy. You sit back and you say, well, I've been the victim of so many terrible things. I can go back to my childhood and the way I was treated or the abuse that I suffered or the way I've been treated by employers in the past or so-called friends. And I could tell you some real horrible stories. And I know you could. God is good, but life sometimes stinks. And how it all works out, why these things happen. You could spend a lot of time screaming, asking those questions, just as I can. But I'll tell you the key. I'll tell you the answer. That little word, W-H-Y, you need to change one letter. You need to change the Y to an O. You need to change the Y to a who. For when you know who, when you know God, when you know his greatness, when you know his love for you, when you know that he is trustworthy, when you know who, suddenly you don't need to know why. Because God does love you and he does care about you and he does have a plan, even when it's hidden from view, even when you don't know the reasons or the purpose, God does have a plan. He is still sovereign, he is still in control, and he can be trusted. This is the lesson we learn from Job. It gets hammered home to us even more definitively later. Notice, though, the rest of verse 15. Job will trust God. Though he slay me, I will trust him. But Job still wants a reason. He still wants an answer to his question. He says, even so, I will defend my own ways before him. He's still pressing to know why. You could say Job passes the test, but in the process gets testy. That's what happens to Job. Job pledges to continue to serve God. But here's what can happen to a sufferer who keeps asking why. Sometimes they can continue to serve God, but they serve him with a grudge. Do you know anybody who serves God with a grudge? This will be Job. Verse 16. He also shall be my salvation, for a hypocrite could not come before him. Job is saying, if I go before God, and if I live to tell about it, I was telling the truth. Listen carefully to my speech and to my declaration with your ears. See now, I have prepared my case. I know that I shall be vindicated. Who is he who will contend with me? If now I hold my tongue, I perish. You know, I've just got to keep pressing these issues until I learn why. Verse 20. Only two things do not do to me, that I will not hide myself from you. Job has two requests of God. First, please don't withdraw your hand far from me. And second, let not the dread of you make me afraid. You know, Job, he's lived a wonderful life, and he's enjoyed this beautiful intimacy with God. I mean, he's walked with God. He's known God personally and intimately. God has walked with him. And suddenly, all of this pain, all of this suffering that has barged into his life, it's created a static on the line between he and God. And Job longs for the intimacy and the familiarity that he once enjoyed with God. He doesn't want that to be taken from him. He says, then call and I will answer. Let me speak. Then you respond to me. I want a dialogue with you again, God. I want that closeness again. And I really need to know why. How many are my iniquities and sins? Make me know my transgression and my sin. Just show me what I did wrong. Why do you hide your face and regard me as your enemy? Again, he screams, why? You know, this is so sad. Job has concluded that God regards him as his enemy. Notice this. Why do you hide your face and regard me as your enemy? Job thinks that God considers him his enemy when just the opposite was true. God was so proud of Job that he staked his honor on Job's reactions. God loved Job. He was proud of Job. Here's the tragedy of a restricted theology. It steals away your assurance of God's love. It takes away that intimacy and that confidence that you have in God. Hey, just because bad things happen doesn't mean that God has abandoned you. Doesn't mean that God doesn't love you. It doesn't mean that you've done something wrong and that God isn't proud of you. There could be a reason hidden from view. Only heaven knows the whole story. And you have to remain confident in God. Verse 25, will you frighten a leaf driven to and fro? And at this point, this is all Job considers himself, just a leaf floating in the wind. Will you pursue dry stubble? For you write bitter things against me and make me inherit the iniquities of my youth. I mean, since there was no particular sin that Job could point to blame his calamity, he figures that he must be paying for some youthful sins, some sins he committed when he was a teenager, you know, on that weekend down in Panama City or whatever. He says, you put my feet in the stocks and watch closely all my paths. You set a limit for the soles of my feet. Man decays like a rotten thing, like a garment that is moth-eaten. I mean, Job wonders why God is picking on him. Or any man for that matter. Man is such a fragile creature. What pleasure does God get to knock him down and to pick on man? Job continues to speak in chapter 14. Man who is born of woman is a few days and full of trouble. Kind of sums it up, doesn't it? Life is full of days, short of days and full of trouble. Man comes forth like a flower and fades away. He flees like a shadow and does not continue. And do you open your eyes on such a one and bring me to judgment with yourself? Who can bring a clean thing out of an unclean? No one. I mean, this is Job's affirmation of original sin. Job knows he's a sinner. I mean, humans are born in sin. I mean, who can bring a clean thing out of an unclean thing? Sinful humans give birth to humans who are sinners. Since his days are determined, the numbers of his months is with you. You have appointed his limits so that he cannot pass. You know, it was Job's belief, and quite frankly, it's mine as well, that we all have a set number of days and months on the earth. And when your hourglass runs out of sand, that's it. Time's up. Our days are determined by God. We've all been given an appointed number. This is why we never know when our number's up. Remember, King Hezekiah was the only man in the Bible who asked for an extension of his days. You remember that? He got an additional 15 years, and nothing good happened, by the way. Might as well be satisfied that God has given us a set number, and we need to make the most of the days he's given us. Verse 6, look away from him that he may rest, till like a hired man he finishes his day. For there is hope for a tree, if it is cut down, that it will sprout again, and that its tender roots will not cease. Though its root may grow old in the earth and its stump may die in the ground, yet at the scent of water it will bud and bring forth branches like a plant. I mean, you chop something down out in your yard, you think you finally got rid of it, and then suddenly the rains come and, oh my, it's sprouted all over again. Plants rejuvenate themselves. They shoot up again. But man dies and is laid away. I mean, once it's over for man, it's over. Indeed, he breathes his last, and where is he? As water disappears from the sea and a river becomes parched and dries up, so man lays down and does not rise. Humans only get one crack at life. Till the heavens are no more, they will not awake nor be roused from their sleep. Now, as I mentioned a couple of weeks ago, you don't make doctrine out of the words of a man who's got boils all over his body, scratching them with a piece of pottery, sitting in a trash heap, moaning and groaning. I mean, this is not the guy that you take his words and you turn them into doctrine. Pain has warped Job's perspective. And here's a good example. Job isn't thinking beyond the grave. He isn't even thinking of his own soul. You see, he's only concerned with his boil-racked body. And that's why he says that once he dies, his body will not awake. It won't be roused from sleep. The Bible teaches us that the body will sleep, but not the spirit. That the moment our spirit leaves this body, it retains its consciousness. It goes either to heaven or to hell. The moment your spirit, your body will sleep. It sleeps in the ground. You know, when we bury you, or when you bury me. I mean, we'll bury our body in the ground, dust to dust, ashes to ashes. Our bodies will sleep, but our spirits will leave our bodies and immediately be conscious of their new surroundings. They'll have a new environment, and it'll either be heaven or it'll be hell. Verse 13. Oh, that you would hide me in the grave, that you would conceal me until your wrath is past. I mean, think of Job. Think of the suffering. Think of the boils, the pain, the suffering he's experienced. I mean, you can understand from Job's perspective how that death would be a welcome relief. That you would appoint me a set time and remember me. If a man dies, shall he live again? All the days of my hard service I will wait till my change comes. Now this is interesting. Job gets a rejuvenation here of good doctrine. He does believe in a resurrection. He believes that the body will be resurrected in the future. And this is his hope, that his change will come. That he too will one day receive a body without boils. And then that's a great hope for us all, isn't it? That God will one day resurrect these bodies. That he'll give us new bodies. Bodies without cancer. And bodies that don't get sick and don't become ill and don't corrupt. Incorruptible bodies, Paul calls them in 1 Corinthians 15. He says, you shall call and I will answer you. You shall desire the work of your hands. For now you number my steps, but do not watch over my sin. My transgression is sealed up in a bag, and you cover my iniquity. You know, God, I wish you'd open the bag and show me what I've done wrong. But as mountain falls and crumbles away, and as a rock is moved from its place, as waters wears away stone, and as torrents wash away the soil of the earth, so you destroy the hope of man. You prevail forever against him, and he passes on. You change his countenance and send him away. Job hopes in the resurrection, but his suffering has eroded his hope like water erodes a mountainside. I mean, his pain, all his calamity, has washed away his hope. Verse 21. His sons come to honor, and he does not know it. They are brought low, and he does not perceive it, but his flesh will be in pain over it, and his soul will mourn over it. In other words, we don't live long enough to see how our sons turn out. This, again, is another frustration that we have in life. Well, chapter 15 begins with the second round of these accusations. Eliphaz steps back up to the microphone. Then Eliphaz, the Temanite, answered and said, should a wise man answer with empty knowledge and fill himself with the east wind? Now, if you look at a map, what was east of Edom? Desert. The east wind was an arid, dry, hot desert wind. And so once again, Eliphaz is accusing Job of being full of hot air. Calls him an east wind. Should he reason with unprofitable talk or by speeches with which he can do no good? Yes, you cast off fear and restrain prayer before God. You know, it's interesting. Eliphaz accuses Job of never having prayed about his situation. Of course, that wasn't true. But what's odd is that none of Job's three friends in this whole dialogue ever bothered to stop and pray for their friend themselves.
From March the 10th to the 23rd, I'll be leading a tour to Israel, and we would love for any of our listeners to join us. We'll start at the magnificent theater on the Mediterranean where Paul preached to King Agrippa, and we'll end with worship and communion at the Garden Tomb. In between, it's one exciting adventure after another. Imagine relaxing by the Sea of Galilee one day and floating on the Dead Sea the next, exploring waterfalls in the Golan Heights, and admiring the desert from the top of Masada. We'll spend time in the rock city of Petra and in the holy city of Jerusalem. We'll ride camels, wade through Hezekiah's tunnel, boat across the Sea of Galilee, and study God's Word at every turn. Hey, a trip to Israel is like a Bible study on steroids. If you've never been, I encourage you to go. And if you like, you can go with us. Our trip is affordably priced. If you'd like more details, please contact us. Here's Josh to give you that information.
Thanks, Pastor Sandy. Yes, to learn more about this exciting trip, visit sandyadams.org. Again, this amazing trip is taking place March 10th through the 23rd, 2019. We encourage you to contact the church office at Calvary Chapel Stone Mountain. You can call us at 770-736-2828 or log on to sandyadams.org. On behalf of Pastor Sandy and the entire production team, it's our prayer that you would seek the Lord about joining Pastor Sandy in Israel in March of 2019.